Malcolm Turnbull is holding talks with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in Tokyo.
Prime Minister Abe and I are committed to open markets and free trade in a rules-based order in our region.
The leaders agreed that Japan's self-defense forces and the Australian military will cooperate more closely on defense, including joint drills.
Abe wants to strengthen those ties and would like to know that Australia has its back.
Hello, this is Japan in Focus and I'm Eleni Soltis. Coming up, North Korea has been accused of going on the charm offensive at the Winter Olympic Games, but is it working?
Just the imagery of what they've been doing at the summit, I mean, many people have been saying they're the ones who've won the gold medal at this Olympics.
And we'll also hear why one newspaper advertisement upset Japanese chocolate makers ahead of Valentine's Day. The Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and US President Donald Trump have agreed to keep up pressure on North Korea until Pyongyang abandons its nuclear and missile programs. The two leaders spoke over the phone this week after Kim Jong-un's sister visited the Winter Olympic Games in Pyeongchang. During the visit, she invited the South Korean president to meet Kim Jong-un in person. But Prime Minister Abe says dialogue for the sake of dialogue would be meaningless, and he also accused North Korea of going on a charm offensive at the Games. For more on Japan's response, I spoke to Jonathan Miller, a senior visiting fellow at the Japan Institute of International Affairs in Tokyo.
I think that the Abe administration in Japan has, in principle, been open to the fact. They basically felt that they had to be when Moon has outlined his approach, and then the U.S. kind of wavered initially on this, and then the U.S. supported this. And the Moon administration, I think, was very crafty in the way that it credited the Trump administration for helping it facilitate the direct talks with North Korea. So I think Abe reluctantly felt that he had to go along with it. But with regard to this, the most recent engagement, I think the Abe administration is a bit concerned that the meeting with Moon and the North Korean officials didn't really address any of the concrete problems on the nuclear weapons program and the missile issue. And there's concern that this summit that is going to be very difficult to avoid, it seems that Moon has kind of set the path to have that summit with North Korea in the coming months. What concessions will be made to make that session a reality, whether that's a further delay of the military exercises, would be seen as weakening deterrence. So I think that's the kind of view in Tokyo right now.
We've even seen Vice President Mike Pence, who was in Pyeongchang for the start of the Olympics, say that, you know, the US is open for talks without preconditions with North Korea. That's a subtle shift in White House policy, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting from Washington. I mean, you're getting all sorts of varied signals and messages. You heard this. There was a report of this after Vice President Pence's trip to South Korea, but also the visual there of him being there and not only discussing with the North Korean delegates, but also his stony-faced approach to the whole kind of ceremonial aspect of it. So, it's unreally sure which sort of U.S. side you're going to get. I don't think the U.S. is overly happy with the idea of a summit in Pyongyang where there's no addressing of the nuclear program. Are they in favor of talks where they can concretely address the issue of denuclearization? I think that's something that they would be interested in, but talks just for talk's sake, I'm not quite sure that's something that Washington is overly interested in.
A picture indeed says 1,000 words. Haven't the pictures been astonishing out of Pyeongchang, especially that image of the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in shot with Kim Jong-un's sister Kim Yo-jong and, of course, Mike Pence and his wife?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the whole background of Abe even going to the Olympics was interesting. I mean, as you know, the deep tensions and between Japan and South Korea bilaterally on historical issues and some of the pressures domestically within his own party not to attend the session due to the disagreements over the kind of the falling apart of the 2015 agreement on the comfort women issue. But I think the final decision there, a lot of it was made based on what's happening with North Korea and U.S. pressure there. Vice President Pence didn't want to be stuck alone there next to Moon and the visiting North Koreans. So I think that Abe's presence was very important, but it was a stark imagery to see the two of them seated next to Moon and the North Korean delegates behind.
Do you think the North Korean delegation, in particular sending Kim Jong-un's sister to the Games, has drawn a wedge between South Korea and Japan?
Well, I think that North Korea, I mean, their long and tried and tested strategy is to do this driving of wedges. And it's not only between South Korea and Japan. I mean, that is one of them, but also between the U.S. and South Korea. And I mean, that's my biggest concern about this whole, the whole theatrics of all this, is that from the North Korean side, I mean, just the imagery of what they've been doing at the summit. I mean, many people have been saying they're the ones who've won the gold medal at this Olympics. And then put on top of that, the Trump card where they delivered the summit invitation. What I keep coming back to is the fact that nothing fundamentally has changed on the core issues of instability, which focus a lot on the nuclear program and the missile program. So there's been a lot of positive imagery. There's been a lot of smiles and handshakes, but still the bottom line has not changed. And I think there's a concern, I think, that the more and more that South Korea follows this approach, that it will indeed kind of drift away from the trilateral efforts of deterrence and sanctions. And North Korea knows it and wants to exploit that. So I think that's something that we have to be very careful of.
Talking about these programs, throughout the Games, have we seen any activity around North Korea's missile or nuclear programs?
No. So, I mean, I think North Korea is playing it quite smart. I mean, they've been walking the line. I mean, they had their military parade that they brandished their some of their new equipment just a days before the game. So, I mean, that was a kind of a PR stunt that they could kind of sell back home. But notably, they didn't have a lot of new machinery or equipment there that was shown at that parade. So that was kind of seen as a sign maybe they're being less provocative. And as far as high-level tests, we haven't seen that. We haven't seen movements that would suggest that one would be coming in the coming days. So I think the North Koreans are playing that out. I don't think that it's the last of North Korean tests that we've seen, but I think that if they feel that they can secure a summit, that they know that as well, that conducting ballistic missile tests is not going to be an environment that even Moon Jae-in with his approach would be able to come to North Korea under that climate. So I think that for that reason, I think North Korea is taking a pause and seeing what happens.
Jonathan Miller, a senior visiting fellow at the Japan Institute of International Affairs in Tokyo there. Professor Kazuhiko Togo was an ambassador to the Netherlands and is now director of the Institute for World Affairs at Kyoto Sangyo University. He says the Japanese public generally welcomes North Korea's participation at the Winter Olympics.
I think people in general have no objection for the improvement of this kind of atmosphere, but participating into the Games and utilizing this opportunity as a triggering factor for the dialogue is two different things. I don't think there is anyone in Japan who is objecting to the participation of North Korea team in the Olympics, but it is quite obvious that North Korea, supported by Moon Jae-in government, is trying to make this occasion as a political starting point of their talks. And for this, Abe government is expressing some concern. This is why Abe went to the opening ceremony and expressed his concern, but expressing concern is very different from objecting.
The U.S. Navy officer overseeing military operations in the Pacific has warned that Kim Jong-un's long-term goal is to reunify the divided Korean Peninsula under his totalitarian government. Is that also a serious concern for Tokyo?
I don't think South Korea will ever accept that term. When Moon Jae-in is a president who is very keen on unification, but unification under the terms of North Korea, I think it's not acceptable for any South Koreans that I know, and it is not acceptable by Moon Jae-in.
But is Japan against any kind of unification, even if it's indeed a democracy?
I think, you know, Japan is not in a position to say whether we accept or not. It is primarily, and I would say exclusively, a matter of the two Korean nations. If they want unification, how Japan can be a factor to say whether we like it or whether we don't want it. You know, scholars and journalists may make analysis that a unification of North Korea, from the point of view, for instance, the geopolitical realist analysis, is whether it's in the interest of Japan or interest for China or interest for Russia or interest for United States. But I think these are scholarly discussions. And if the two Koreans really begin to decide that this is the direction they really want to move, I don't think any country in this region has a right to create a political obstacle against it.
Even the U.S.?
My view is that Korean unification is a matter of the Koreans. I may be a little bit idealistic in this sense.
Professor Kazuhiko Togo from Kyoto Sangyo University there. And you're listening to Japan in Focus on ABC News. So Valentine's Day is done a bit differently in Japan. On that day, it's the woman that gives the chocolate to the man. But one Belgian chocolate company this year decided to publish a large ad in a national Japanese newspaper telling women that there was no need for this. As Casey Basile, who is an editor and writer for the Japanese website Sora News 24, explains.
In Japan, the tradition is a little bit different than other countries. In Japan, traditionally, it's women who give chocolate to men on Valentine's Day. And while some women obviously will give chocolate to a boyfriend or husband, it's also common for women to platonically give some chocolate to male friends, male coworkers, as kind of a general thank you for everything they've done during the year. The term for this in Japanese, they call it giri choco, which means obligation chocolate. So some women aren't entirely crazy about doing this. It's not something that every woman hates, but sometimes it can be a bit of a hassle if you have a lot of people you have to shop for. So Godiva's, the Belgian chocolate maker Godiva, their Japanese branch, had heard some dissatisfaction from someone in Japan about this and decided to put out a one-page newspaper ad saying, hey, Japan, let's stop giving obligation chocolate on Valentine's Day.
Hang on, let me just clarify here. This chocolate maker puts out a huge spread in a newspaper telling the Japanese not to do a Japanese custom, essentially.
Kind of. Their phrasing for it was very, very diplomatic, though. Literally, the phrase that they used literally translates to, let's stop doing this. So it wasn't quite a heavy-handed, hey, you guys are wrong and knock this off. It was a one-page ad in one of the major Japanese newspapers, so it's a pricey bit of advertising to take out for that. This was not a cheap viral marketing campaign they did. So it was a pretty big and bold attempt to grab attention.
But why would they advertise that? It's not in their interest, right? You're telling women, don't buy chocolate, the chocolate we make. Why do that?
So, in general, obligation chocolate is going to be inexpensive chocolate. If you say, hey, I have to buy some little trinkets and little snacks and munchies for 10 guys that I work with, you're not going to spend a lot of money. You're going to buy inexpensive chocolate. I think Godiva understands that if people stop buying obligation chocolate, which is low priced, they'll have more money left over to buy chocolate either for a boyfriend or a husband, or as increasingly a lot of Japanese women are doing, to buy chocolate for themselves at Valentine's Day too.
Okay, so a potential ulterior motive there, but how have Japanese chocolate manufacturers responded to this ad?
Japan is very much a non-confrontational society, and that goes for marketing as well. You rarely hear one company call out another company in their marketing. However, there is a brand of chocolate in Japan called Black Thunder, which is incredibly low priced. And they recently put out an ad, but on their official Twitter account, they put out a rebuttal to Godiva saying, hey, you're free to do and say whatever you would like. But for those consumers, those women in Japan who do like the idea of giving a small gift at Valentine's Day just to say thank you, we're here to help you with that.
And let's not forget there is a counter day as well. I mean, there's White Day next month where women do receive chocolate.
There's White Day, which comes 1 month later on March 14th, where women receive chocolate and other gifts. And basic etiquette usually dictates that the return gift that the man gives to a woman who gave him Valentine's Day chocolate should be 3 times the cost of the gift that he received.
That was Casey Basile there, an editor and writer for the Japanese website Sora News 24. And that's all for Japan in Focus for this week. Jamata ne. See you next time.